The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan podcast by night, all day.
Mike Birbiglia, easily the most prepared stand-up comedian guest in the history of this podcast. Look at this. Homeboy has got page after page after page. He also has printed stuff.
I know.
He's got, you're writing out in longhand.
You're one of the last
humans to use cursive.
It's all insanity, though. It doesn't add up to anything, really.
But it does. You know, it adds up to effort, right? Like, all that is making sure you're writing things down, and puts it in your brain.
There's a short documentary about Lynn Shawcroft and Mitch Hedberg, and one of the things that he says in this old interview is, like, people ask him for advice all the time, young comedians, and he just says, write down what's funny. Don't be lazy. Don't be lazy.
That's a good piece of advice.
Great piece of advice, right?
Especially from a heroin addict. It's very rare that you get, like, non-lazy heroin addicts. I mean, look,
Don't make me laugh at that.
Well, it's not funny, but it is true, and I think it's important to talk about because that's why he's not with us anymore. He's one of the greats.
He is.
In my opinion, he's one of the most incredibly original comedians of all time. He was so good and so clean.
He's super clean,
yeah. Which, like, for no reason.
Because he was so inventive.
His mind was so inventive. Yeah. He was a really unique comic, but he also had a problem with heroin.
He had some drug issues. It seemed.
I like how you say that.
I never.
You should run for office.
Well, right. No. Who am I to say? I never. I was friends with Mitch. I never saw him use drugs.
That's true. I was friends with Mitch, and I never saw him use drugs either. But
I saw him. Yeah, I saw him the final week, and it's just this very sad thing.
Well, when Doug Stanhope and I were working together on The Man Show, the bastardized second version of The Man Show,
I remember,
was when he got gangrene in his leg.
I remember that in Texas, yeah.
Yeah, he almost lost his leg. And, you know, he came back from that, and everybody was hoping that he was going to clean up and get his shit together. But for whatever reason, whatever, you know, what's really important. Yes,
he burned brightly, and he's gone.
Yeah, what was important, though, about his artwork, what he did was he was so prolific, you know, and constantly, and his style.
Super disciplined, yeah.
Very disciplined, and his style is like a really difficult style to be prolific with.
Yeah.
Because it's all like weird observations that are non sequiturs, one non sequitur after another.
Yeah, I know. I have this memory when it all feels like a blur, but like I remember when he passed away and there was a memorial service like at Caroline's in New York, and I was standing on the street with Dave Attell and my wife and Mitch's mother, Mary, and she's passed away now, and there Dave and Mary were smoking cigarettes, and then Dave goes, it was gonna sound trite the way I'm repeating it, but Dave has a profoundness to him that kind of gets away with this. He was just like, "We'll always have the albums." Like, we'll always have the albums. And it's true. Like, there is something to that. It's like, we lose a lot of people, but with Mitch, we have this really special thing. Like, we have these beautiful comedy albums, which are, like, a moment in time that are perfect jokes and, like, perfect wisdom. Like, they're wisdom. Like, there's wisdom in Mitch's comedy, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I agree. They're one of those things where, you know, some of his jokes are just so preposterous, but other ones, you know, you'll just listen to it and you just go... You know, what the fuck? Like my favorite is, somebody asked me if I wanted a frozen banana. I said, no, but I want a regular banana later. So, yes.
Yeah. I love that.
Like, they're so uniquely him. You know, and almost like, there's like a vein of that comedy that goes from, I guess, like Stephen Wright, you know, who's got that sort of absurdist, weird way of looking at things. But then Mitch would take it to a totally new place.
And a totally personal place. Like, I remember that he has this joke, and I'm going to kind of mess it up because I don't remember people's jokes that well, but like where he goes, I said a thing, and then someone didn't hear me that well, and then they asked me to repeat it, and then... it's the steamboat operator joke, and I'm forgetting how he gets to it. But it's about being. It's ultimately about being misunderstood. I feel bad. I went down that road thinking that my brain. Maybe I need some more of these chemicals. You have the HGH or something. Not HGH, but all these things. I have fancy coffee that is super good that with the butter in it.
Yeah, bulletproof coffee.
It's not working for me yet. But,
well, it's early, man. For a comedian, there's a joke. I'm trying to find that. Mitch
if
Hedberg
you
go, thing.
If you YouTube Steve Mode operator, you'll find that joke.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to find.
I gotta say, like, one of the things I even like hearing you talk before we started talking, the thing that I admire about your comedy. And Mitch's and, like, Stanhope. Stanhope's my favorite comic by far. And the reason why, and it's the same thing that you have and all the comics are, Maria Bamford, no one could steal their jokes.
Oh, they do.
But you can't steal them and have the other person wouldn't go so well as well as it will for you.
No. Well, yeah, isn't that the beautiful thing about comedy when it comes from your personality? You know, when like you listen to a Mitch Hedberg joke, you know, like the Double Tree Hotel joke, you know, like he mines in a way that I would never mine, you know, like he mines for material in a way. Like another good example of that is Patton. Patton Oswalt will
Patton
take
Oswalt's
a bit.
Like that too.
Like I look at it, so like I've listened to some of his CDs and I go, that's a bit that I probably would have abandoned.
Yeah.
I would have started maybe working on it, tried it on stage a few times and just moved on to something with more meat to it.
Yeah.
But he'll take an idea that's like an odd idea that maybe I would have abandoned and turn it into an amazing 10-minute chunk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, Patton's totally like that. Also, one of the things I love about Patton is he's just genuinely passionate about what he's talking about.
Here it is. I wrote a letter to my dad. I really enjoy being here, but I accidentally wrote rarely instead of really. But I still wanted to use it, so I crossed it out and wrote, I rarely drive steamboats, Dad.
This is a lot of shit you don't know about me. Quit trying to act like I'm a steamboat operator. This letter took a harsh turn right away. That's like one of my favorite jokes of all time.
That's a perfect joke. That was a great impression, by the way.
But isn't that exactly, like, that's like a piece of philosophy, I think.
Yeah,
it's not just a joke. I really do think that.
Well, it's a piece of Mitch.
It is.
You know, that in Attell's way of saying it, you know, we still have the albums. We do. We have that. You know? We do have that. Yeah, that's one of the coolest things about the art form, you know, the insight into how a person's mind functions and how they put together material that, you know, like Gaffigan, like, I don't think like Gaffigan. Is that his writing up there?
Yeah, isn't that great?
I don't believe people believe in
Is
ghosts.
Is that the documentary I was talking about?
They don't believe in themselves.
Yeah.
I know people believe in ghosts, but they don't believe in themselves. That's a great
one.
We
should tell people what the URL is of that site, because it's on YouTube, this documentary. Where Lynn, his widow, Lynn Shawcroft, who's a very funny comic as well, is in the cabin that they shared, and she takes out his notebook, and she's showing what it was in his notebook.
Yeah, and their cabin was up in Big Bear, right? Like, when he got a development deal, you know, some people go out and they buy a Mercedes. He bought a cabin in Big Bear.
Yeah, exactly.
You know
what he said to me once? It's funny looking at this notebook. Mitch goes to me. I opened for him, and it's the first time I ever featured. It was at Joker's Comedy Club in Dayton, Ohio.
Oh, I know the place.
And he goes, don't ever show a girl your notebook because she's not supposed to know about it. She's just supposed to see the final jokes on stage.
That's so true.
Isn't that true?
When you date girls and they see your act over and over and over again and they just lose all the magic.
You have to either marry them or break up with them.
You got to do one or the other. Because otherwise they're going to tell their friends.
He just repeats the same shit every night, and then he gets it right. Yeah. It's not that big a deal. I can do it.
The mystique goes away.
The mystique. The mystique of the writing. But he was he was such a unique guy in that he did obviously have issues with drugs, but he also obviously was really fucking prolific and really wrote a lot and was really disciplined.
Yeah.
Now, in that sense, he was just an odd combination of things.
Yeah, no, he absolutely was. He was a phenomenon.
Yeah.
People should, I feel like I should almost plug this as we're talking to it. Mitch Altogether, great album.
Yeah.
You can get it on iTunes or Spotify or whatever. And Strategic Grill Locations was his first album. I love that album.
Yeah,
I think that's perfect.
Strategic Grill Locations is an awesome, awesome classic. Now, you got a new album out? It's coming out?
It just came out. Yeah, it's called My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, and it's about a lot of like heartbreak and love and how I decided to get married despite the fact that I don't really believe in the idea of marriage.
Yeah, it's a stupid idea, but it works for them. It works for women. Women love it. They love it. They love being able to tell their friends they're married.
Do you think that's what it is?
Oh, yeah, definitely. They like winning. They win. When you get married, they win. They enjoy that. Yeah, my wife totally won.
That's an interesting perspective. I've never thought about it like that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm happier, though. Are you happier?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it's also because I'm in a great relationship. I would have been just as happy if I didn't have some shit written down on paper or wearing a little monkey ring, you know. It's all that stuff is it seems secondary, but for women, it means a lot that you go through that nonsense. Or for some women, I should say. I should never generalize like that. Some of them, they want that. They want that nonsense. They want that cultural nonsense. They want to be able to tell their friends they're married.
Yeah, I think, well, I think part of it's the family, too.
Yes.
The families are like, what's going on?
Oh, yeah. No
doubt. Is this real?
Yeah.
People start to go, yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's certain things that people just don't, like, they don't believe unless it has a formal cultural understanding. Like, this is maybe a tangential example, but, like, my cat passed away this summer. And,
I'm sorry to laugh at your cat passing away. Right. I'm just trying to figure out how you're going to connect these.
So, like, and I don't know either yet, but my cat, Ivan, passed away. My wife and I were so upset. Like, the whole summer was like, our cat passed away. That's, people would be like, what's up? We'd be like, our cat, Ivan, passed away.
Really? The whole summer?
Yeah, we were really upset by it. He was 17 years old.
I have a 17-year-old cat right now.
Yeah, so, like, we were so, so close to Ivan, and explaining that your cat died is a little bit like explaining that your imaginary friend died, where you're like, Ivan's dead. And they're like, right, Ivan. And you're like, no, really, our cat Ivan. They're like, right, your cat Ivan. And I feel like marriage is a little bit like that, too. You're like, if you're not married, you can be like, it's my boyfriend, and I love him, and he loves me. And they're like, right, your boyfriend, and he loves you.
Yeah, but he doesn't love
married,
you enough.
Exactly. If you're married, then it's like, oh, you got the document? You got the legal document? Well, okay, I buy it.
Yeah, and then there's some people that they look at that as like, there's like goals that they have to achieve. Like, you get in a relationship, okay, check. Now, next move, you got to get this guy to sign this paper and
I hate that.
Yeah.
That's the part of it I hate.
I have a friend who went through a fucking absolutely brutal divorce. I mean, a really, really bad one.
Yeah.
And then his new wife, he started dating this woman immediately afterwards, of course, and she didn't want to sign a prenup.
Yeah.
And he lost everything. And, you know, and he's like, I don't know what to do. I'm like, you don't know what to do. You don't know what to do. Do you hate yourself? Like, are you fucking crazy? Like, marriage doesn't always work out, buddy. It doesn't always work out.
The prenup on the second marriage?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Like, and he lost everything on the first marriage.
Yes.
Wow.
He lost everything on the first marriage. And I'm pretty sure they overlapped. Like, his first marriage was falling. I'd have to ask him about this. His first marriage was falling apart. And then he met her. And there was, like, you know, he knew her while he was still with his wife. And then he got divorced. Like, he had, like, you know, there was that old expression about, like, swinging from branch to branch.
Yeah.
That, you know, most women especially, they don't like to let go of a branch. They like to swing and then know that there's another branch there when they let go of their first branch.
Or you don't have to say women, you just say people.
Yes, humans.
Humans, yeah. But like, yeah. The marriage thing is weird now, particularly, too, in light of all of these supplements and things that you talk about, because people are just going to live longer.
Well, not with this stuff. I mean,
really?
Yeah. I mean, if you're lucky, you get another 5 years or 10 years. I mean, alpha brain and protein and vitamins. I mean, I don't know, man. What studies have been done on life extension as far as like vitamins?
Well,
maybe a little bit.
I mean, I guess that combined with like hip replacements and heart transplants and all this. Well, there's so much futuristic stuff right now that's going to make people live longer, and then it's going to be like, it already was weird that we were married 30 years. What about when we're married, like, 70 years?
Well, in that sense, I think that if it works, it works. And if you're married for 30 years and you're really happy and then you get to live for another 100, would you want to break up and start fresh with a new person and try to put it together? Like, part of, like, what makes a marriage work or friendship work or anything is you kind of understand how each other works.
Yeah.
You kind of understand what the ins and the outs
absolutely,
of each person.
Absolutely, your team.
Yeah. That when that happens, so much theoretically, in practice, when it's done perfectly, which it never is.
Yeah.
But when it is done perfectly, that's what makes it so cool, is that you know each other.
Yeah.
You know, like you go to the store and like, oh, I know she loves this kind of shit. Let's go get her this.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're going to go on a vacation. She's never going to want to do this. Or she loves doing this.
Yeah.
You know each other. So in that sense, would it really matter if you live to be an extra 100 years?
Probably not.
except you'd start thinking about all that extra pussy.
That age 100 pussy is crazy. I've heard.
Yeah, it gets different. It's like wine in a barrel or old scotch.
I just want to take that back from the record. I know this is live, but I just want to take back that age 100 pussy line.
These are just jokes, folks. If you looked at this stuff written down on paper, you go, "These guys are assholes." What kind of statements are these?
Yeah, but in the moment, this is great.
Yes, in the moment,
this is exciting. I love that you have this.
Oh, the studio?
Yeah, you have the studio, and you have your people who listen, and, like, you don't even have to go, I'm going on Conan tonight, you don't have to go on Conan, you don't have to go on talk shows, because you have, like, I looked on your website, you're playing the goddamn Chicago Theater.
Yeah.
The Chicago Theater, what? That's so huge, you can't get bigger than that, and you're just here in your studio, being like, "Hey guys, I'm coming to the Chicago Theater."
Yeah, I'm coming soon. When is that? January 24th, Chicago Theater. Me and the great Ari Shaffir. Ooh, should be good times. Yeah, that place is awesome. Ari is. But he could close. Ari Shaffir is a legit headliner now.
Oh, okay. I'm sure.
Do you know Ari?
I think I do.
Yeah, this thing is...
I remember seeing him in that video, the Carlos Mencia video.
Yes. Yeah, he was one of the first guys that Carlos ripped off back in the day. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. I'm sure Carlos started ripping guys off way before Ari, but one of the first guys that I knew that, like, suffered from it.
Yeah.
But yeah, this place sort of has come together slowly but surely.
That's pretty awesome. You know,
becoming more and more childlike as I add special effects pieces.
When I look around here, I'm like, I feel like you could be... I think you might be like a politician in the future. Do you ever get that feeling?
No. How the fuck do you get that? Okay. You look around, you see a predator mask.
Yeah.
You see an alien head, a zombie, a lava lamp, and a deer skull. And you're like, you know what? You should be running shit.
Here's how I arrived there. So you with JFK, you had the first president who was on camera. He was good looking, and before that, you didn't have to be good looking as a president.
That's interesting.
That was like a big shift in culture,
right?
And they say that Barack Obama is like the first president where it's like he's like a rock star president. Like people are like, he's fucking cool. Like a lot of people say like people voted for him because they're just excited. It's like he's so exciting. And I'm gonna take it a step further. Like 20 years from now, the president is hilarious.
It's not happening. There's nothing hilarious about running the military-industrial complex.
No, I know.
Unless some massive paradigm shift takes place where we no longer have war. I don't see anybody running any country being hilarious.
The president is hilarious, and he's in great shape. And, that's all I got. That's why I think you could be a politician in the future, right?
That's it?
The
time has come.
Well, because I feel like if you were in charge, I would vote for you because I would feel confident. I'd be like, okay, sure, he smokes some pot.
A little bit.
Sure, he smokes some pot now and then. But he's really strong, physically strong, smart, funny. That's enough for me. Reasonable
is probably the most important thing anybody needs. What do you think, like, the most important quality you need to govern? I think it's probably not wanting to govern, not wanting to be the guy that's in charge. I think that might be one of the best qualities that anybody could ever have. If you want to run things, you should not want to be the guy who runs things.
Yeah, I think so. I think, level-headed, I think, is a huge quality. I mean, I feel like the reason I voted for Barack Obama is, like, I just felt like, okay, he seems smart.
Well, what was the alternative?
He seems level-headed.
Dead man and a dumb cunt. That was the alternative. And so what was the alternative next? It was a fucking Mormon, a guy who's literally believes in one of the most preposterous religious stories in the history of humanity. And his family was a part of a cult that moved to Mexico so they could have more wives.
Yeah.
You know that story about... Fuckhead,
Mitt Romney's parents,
they lived in Mexico.
Oh yeah, I didn't even know that.
You didn't know that?
I think I'd heard about it, but I don't know the full story.
His dad could never be president because his dad was born in Mexico.
Oh,
his dad wasn't an American citizen that way. He wasn't born a natural born citizen. where, you know, Mitt is. He was born in America.
Yeah.
But his family comes from this sect of Mormonism that broke off from the United States back in the 1800s when it really didn't matter if you lived in – you can live in Mexico, you live in America. It doesn't matter. There's no cars. So that's what they did. They moved to Mexico. Shit didn't turn out so good for that bet. That bet sucked. Like the bet that, well, it's nice down here. It's pretty much the same as it is in America. We're just going to go over here and have 10 wives. Well, obviously, when the invention of cars came along and the whole age of machines and the industrial era, machines and, you know, the United States became this superpower and Mexico became what it is today. And now they're involved in these armed standoffs with the Mexican drug cartels. They get kidnapped. They have fortified compounds, and they have sentries and snipers and rifles and everything. I mean, it's really crazy, crazy shit. Vice did, like, a piece on that.
Yeah.
On the various Mormon families that are living in... But that was our other option!
Yeah.
Our other option was one of those guys.
Yeah.
A guy who believes in magic underwear and a fucking a con artist who was 14 years old who claimed he found golden tablets that contained the lost work of Jesus.
Yeah.
And that the American Indians were a tribe of Israelites that came over. I mean, it's just...
That's a great book if people want to know about Mormonism at all, is Under the Banner of Heaven. Did you ever read that one?
No.
It's
good
a
stuff.
Great book, yeah.
Did you see the Book of Mormon?
Krakauer wrote it? Yeah. The Book of Mormon's great. I saw it twice.
It's fucking amazing.
It's so good.
You know, the crazy thing is Mormons like it. Mormons advertise.
I know, yeah.
Like when you get the playbill, it's
no.
like there's advertisements.
Oh, there's
for
advertisements?
Mormonism. Yes. Yeah. For the
That is so great.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Now you've seen the play, you know, come find out what being a Mormon's really all about. Like they think they're going to like people are going to like go watch that hilarious parody of what their religion is all about.
I honestly think that maybe I'm taking it too far, but I feel like Matt and Trey are the closest to Twain that we have.
Yes.
Where it's like what they're doing is brilliant satire.
Yes.
It's completely over the top and insane and perfectly written.
And they're fucking gangsters. They get away with the craziest shit
nuts.
On TV.
It's nuts.
Did you ever see The Slut Off with Paris Hilton? With Paris Hilton and the gay guy who's the teacher, and the gay guy wins because he stuffs Paris Hilton up his ass. I mean, he stuffed her up. They can get away with so much because they're cartoons.
I know.
And they take on, like the idea of drawing Muhammad. You know, Muhammad
it's
was
amazing.
A teddy bear.
Yeah, I saw that episode.
They take on things where...
Unafraid.
Is this The Slut Off? Watch this. He shoves Paris Hilton up his ass. He jumped on her in a gay cowboy outfit on with a big mustache and shoved her up his ass. I mean,
that's amazing.
And then they cheer the Kanye West gay fish one with the Kanye West and Carlos Mencia episode. It's one of the greatest takedowns in the history of
the Kanye stuff is too good.
Pop culture.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, that's what you know what honestly intimidates me about Los Angeles is like, you know, Matt and Trey are here, you know, like these people who I admire so much, they just all live here in this area, and it's too much for me. I live in New York. I like being away from it.
In what way? Like intimidates you? How?
I feel like I don't want to. It's almost like I don't want to see Matt and Trey like eating at a restaurant or something. Like I don't want to think they're real. I don't want to think that they're mortal or something. Like I love the mystique of show business.
So you like being in New York because you're outside of it.
Yeah, I live in Brooklyn. I'm not part of show business.
Really? That's interesting. You're here on the Joe Rogan Experience podcast to promote your new comedy CD.
That's right.
And yet, you claim to not be in show business. What do you do, Mr. Bibbidi, if you're not in show business?
I travel around the country. I'm going to 100 cities this year.
Oh, you just travel.
Yeah.
You're a professional traveler.
Yeah, I'm a professional traveler. I always say that. I always say I'm a traveling salesman. I sell comedy. I get paid to fly, and I perform for free.
That's funny.
It's true. I'm going to fucking 100 cities next year.
Wow.
Thank God for Jokester. 100. I'm going to four.
Jokester?
It's called Thank God for Jokes, isn't the name of the tour.
Oh, Thank God for Jokes Tour.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying Thank God for Jokester. Like,
yeah.
Jokester,
Jokester
was like some
TM, trademark.
Think that thing that sends you out to these places.
I know.
Like, you know, Friendster or
Thank
something
God
like
for
that.
Joke.
You remember that?
You could, here. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like it's a. Some kind
so
of
you book your shit way in advance.
You call it
then.
Up so you can see the photo. Yeah. Maybe if we can bring it up. Thank God for, or just burbigs.com. I don't know.
That's you you plan your shit out way in advance then, if you're doing 100 dates.
I've announced 30.
What are the obscure places? Because
I'm going to Fargo.
There you go.
I'm going to Fargo, Minneapolis. I'm going to Traverse City, Michigan, East Lansing.
Fargo is not in Minneapolis.
No, Fargo, North Dakota. Yeah, Minneapolis.
Oh, but Minneapolis is not obscure.
No, I guess not.
I was confused.
But Eugene, Oregon.
That's obscure.
That one's pretty obscure.
That's a hippie place. A lot of patchouli people in that audience. I bet.
Troy, New York. That's kind of obscure.
That's obscure as fuck. Where do you play there?
Troy Music Hall.
There's no place to play. Go to some dude's house.
I mean, I'm going to Charleston.
Charleston's kind of, well, that's kind of a name, though.
Yeah, that's a name.
You're
right.
I don't think I could name 100 different cities. I mean, I probably could if you sat me down.
Yeah, if someone put a blank map in front of you, you'd get it.
Kentucky, huh? Doing a little Kentucky there, fella.
Kentucky, yeah.
Louisville's fun, isn't it?
Louisville's a great town.
It's a great town.
Here's the thing I've found about traveling around America. I'm sure you've probably found this. A lot of great little towns.
Well, also, they're Mike Birbiglia fans. They know who you are. They're coming out to see you.
When I show up, they're in a good mood.
Yeah, they're already familiar with you.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, you go to, Boise, Idaho. It's like, oh, this is a nice town.
Boise's great.
Yeah, people make fun of these towns. And then you go there, you're like, oh, no, there's, five great breakfast spots. And you know what I mean?
And, by the way, might be a better place to live.
It might be a better place to live, yeah.
Less tension.
Yeah.
Less stress. Less traffic. That's the one thing that's stupid about L.A. is the mass of humans all gathered into one place.
It's insane.
It's a great place to have a podcast because you can always get guests. You know, there's always people here. But as far as, having sanity and having peace and clarity, this is not the best spot.
What's insane about Los Angeles?
Try the coffee. Try this stuff. Do you like sweeteners? Do you like anything sweet?
Yeah, I'll try that.
This is stevia. It's super strong. It's a natural sweetener.
Okay.
But only put a little bit in.
Okay.
It's very powerful.
I already have butter in the coffee, so I feel it's covered.
Butter. Delicious.
But, Los Angeles is crazy because, coming here, for example, I just, I Google map everything on the way, and it's like, it'll be like, it's 26 miles. And then for time, it'll be like, it might take days.
That's no joke either. You can get stuck in bumper to bumper traffic at 2 o'clock, just a little dash of that stuff. Don't fuck around. Don't get crazy. Don't get crazy, Mike.
Yeah, I'm trying not to.
Just throwing a little Stevie in there.
Just that.
A little bit more of that. Okay, a little crazy. There you go.
Okay.
Stop right there. It's amazing. It's really strong stuff.
But this sounds crazy. It's it feels dangerous. It feels like I'm at risk of being in a car accident at any moment.
Well, you're at risk anytime you're in a car. You know, the it's amazing, really, when you stop and think about it.
This is really good, by the
way. It's great, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing when you stop and think about it how few car accidents there actually are.
The one in my special, which I hope you'll watch, but
I'll watch it.
Yeah, I'm very proud of
it. Why say I hope?
Well,
I'll fucking watch it, Mike Birbiglia. There's no need for hopes.
Okay. So I talk about how I was hit by a car in Los Angeles, and then I was made to pay for the drunk driver's car.
Really?
It was a drunk driver, and I was made to pay for his car. It's maddening.
How are you made to pay for his car?
He technically had the right of way. I was turning right. He was speeding around a blind corner. He technically had the right of way, and then by the time he got to the hospital, he blew under the legal limit.
Wow.
Isn't that wild?
So how long did it take before you got to the hospital?
I paid $12,000 for his car, a couple hours later.
Wow, that's hilarious.
Know,
so you don't test him right away?
Nope. In this instance, no. And so thematically what it's about is about how I couldn't let go of it. It sounds like you have this from, when I listen to you on the podcast, certain times you're obsessed with being right about something, and I couldn't let this go.
Right.
It was kind of like this with the papers. It's like, I had charts and graphs, and I was like, and this is the accident report, and this is the map, this is the Google map of the scene of the accident, and it was 60 feet from here to the stop sign, and the speed limit was 35, and it was maddening.
Were you going on stage with it, like Lenny Bruce at the end of his career, when he would go on with legal documents?
Well, you'll see in the special, I project the accident report, the actual accident report. Yeah, it's bonkers. I go crazy. Yeah. I project the accident report in the show. It's great.
And so the guy was drunk, but he technically had the right of way. I'm trying to figure it out in my mind. You were going around a blind corner. And what
he was
he
coming
doing?
Around a blind corner.
Oh, he was coming around
he
a blind corner.
He was speeding around a blind corner in Venice Beach. And, late at night.
You pulled into the traffic.
I pulled into into a road, and then he T-boned me driver's side.
Wow.
And then I spun around, and then he drove away, took a right turn at the intersection, tried to speed away, but he was so drunk he drove into a tree. So it was like a hit and run and hit.
What?
Isn't
and
that
he
crazy?
Still didn't get in trouble for that?
Yeah.
That's insane.
I talked to lawyers. I talked to private investigators. They were just like, dude, it's going to cost you more in legal fees to fight this. You know, I was like, I'm going to sue this guy, and I'm going to sue the Los Angeles Police Department. Like, I was like, Chinatown. It was like Chinatown.
Wow.
It was maddening.
Well, in the effort to protect people's rights, things get kind of squirrely.
Like, yeah.
I'm all for protecting people's rights, but I think that once you start driving intoxicated and slamming into people, like, they need to figure out who's drunk right away after an accident. You
yeah.
can't let people go all the way to the hospital and then fine. You need that's something that needs to be dealt with on the spot. But the question is, you know, who's going to be the guy who deals with it? It's going to be some knucklehead police officer that's you know, says, we're going to hold you down, tase you, and then take your blood. I mean,
yeah.
How do they get it? They got to have blood, right? Don't they have to take? They can test your blood alcohol content. They can do the breathalyzer thing, right? But
yeah.
the most accurate way is blood, and that's the way yeah. you could. Guy could be on pills too.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. He could be on drugs. Yeah. When I went to the hospital just to make sure I was okay, I went to the emergency room, and they saw him first because he was a more urgent case. I don't know what had happened to him, but...
Fucking tree. That's
yeah,
what happened
exactly.
to him.
And I said to the doctor, I was like, was the other guy drunk? And the doctor says, well, you know, I can't answer that. It's the same doctor who saw both of us.
Right.
And I was like, well, was he? You know, and he goes, well, he's heading to jail now. And at the time, I was like, case closed. You know, like, I thought, like... I was like, oh, this isn't going to be an issue. And then a couple months later, I get the bill for his car. It was insane. It's maddening.
That's so crazy. Who's yeah. this asshole? What's his name?
I can't say.
Say
his
it.
Name. I can't say.
Say
his
it,
name.
Mike Birbiglia. Fuck this guy.
I don't know.
Drunk.
I considered. T-bone and I don't say this in the show, but there were certain points I considered. I had his phone number. It was on the accident report. I considered just calling him and being like, "You should know that you are ruining my life."
Hmm. Well, I think that's being a little bit dramatic. He wasn't really ruining your life. He was just making you crazy. But the fact that you would have to pay for him.
True.
But let's be honest.
I'm just saying it's how I felt.
Oh, you do a couple, tell a couple of jokes and that money's taken care of. You know, you're in a very fortunate position in life. Maybe you should cut your losses.
Thanks, John.
But thanks, you got comedy out of it.
Thanks for this 2020 insight, hindsight.
Yeah, it's real easy.
Reflection.
Meanwhile, I would have went to his house and kicked his ass and wound up in jail.
Yeah, exactly.
At least you got comedy out of it, though, right? I mean,
I feel great. I mean, honestly, that comedy's everything to me. Thank God for Jokes Tour. My new show that I'm developing is actually all about how, like, jokes are, in a certain way, my religion. Like, they're the philosophy that I believe in. I believe life is hard, and then we make jokes about it because it's all we can do.
And it makes it more fun.
Yeah.
But still to this day, stand-up comedy is one of my favorite things to watch. I still enjoy it very much as an audience member. And if someone told me that I could never perform comedy for the rest of my life for some strange reason, but I could still watch it, I would still love watching it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Man, I thought Stanhope's special this year, the Beer Hall Push, I think is how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
That was like one of the best comedy specials I've ever seen.
It was a really good one. That was
my wife
and
I were just like, it was like a euphoric experience, the two of us watching that.
Yeah, he's working hard, man. And one of the things that Stanhope's doing is he's like really, he is that guy. He lives in the desert. He lives in this weird fucking town in Arizona that's like 7 miles.
Bisbee,
Arizona, 7 miles from the Mexican border. He invites people over to his house for Super Bowl parties.
I know.
He's a nut. I mean, he's a legit nut. He's a great guy, too. He's really like coming to his own as an artist, you know, as a stand-up comedian.
That special is, there are any aspiring comedians listening or watching, see that special.
Before Turning the Gun on Himself is a great one, too. He's got a bunch of great ones. He's got lots of good stuff.
This is the one where he talks about letting his mother go.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an incredible story.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff, man. I couldn't live in Bisbee, Arizona, though. I don't know what the fuck he's thinking. No.
He's just, it was very strange. I don't know how to describe what that.
There's nothing there, man. He's got a great joke about living there too. The idea of it being an artist community and the difference between how his art and their art doesn't really go together. Like they make turquoise belt buckles, and he's making a joke about tsunami victims, about how the drowned Japanese, they start to swell and they take on this Korean look, and it's I'm really butchering the bit, but it's fucking hilarious. It's
yeah.
a comparison between his art, what he considers art, and what they consider art.
Yeah.
Artist community, you know.
One of the things I love about him is he keeps like twisting the knife in different directions.
Yeah,
like he'll take you one way and you'll be like, "Ooh, I don't know if I could go there," and then he'll take you back farther in the other direction.
Yeah,
farther right than you could think you could go, and then he'll pull you farther left than you thought. You know what I mean? Like he just always has you on your toes.
He works, you know, that dude. You see him sitting there smoking a cigarette, drinking coffee, banging away on the keyboard. He
yeah.
works, you know. And that is, like you said, you know, when you're saying that jokes are your religion.
Yeah.
That the discipline of creation is really what it's all about. Whether you're writing books, whether you're writing jokes, whether you're creating music, whatever. I admire the discipline involved in creating things. Anything.
Yeah.
Podcasts, music, movies, whatever the fuck you're making.
Yeah.
Matt and Trey making South Park and also having some strange amount of time to make the Book of Mormon as well.
Did you see that documentary about Matt and Trey making South Park? It's great.
Nuts.
People should watch it. It's on Netflix. It's called like 60 Seconds to Air or something like that. What is it? 60 Minutes to Air?
6 days to air.
6 days to air, yeah. It's super good.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's inspirational, too. And you realize what a bad motherfucker that, well, both of them, but.
Yeah, but Trey is like.
A bad motherfucker.
Yeah, the guy's nonstop.
Yeah, he's just a nut. But I think he obviously gets off on it. I mean, that's his thing. He loves creating that fucking show. And that show is such a perfect vehicle, too, because by doing little cartoon kids that don't look anything like reality, and then also having them be kids, so there's like a certain amount of ignorance you can get away with, because you know, Cartman's a child.
It's such
a beautiful vehicle for creating comedy.
Yeah.
When you write, like all this shit that you've got in front of you here, why do I feel heat? Where's heat coming from?
I got a little space heater over there.
Oh, that's what it is. I was like, man, I know our heat's broken. We have to get someone to climb on the roof and turn our fucking pilot light on. How retarded is that? When you write, do you sit down and go, okay, today I'm going to write from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m.? Or I mean, how do you do it?
I build it from I brainstorm stories. So I'll talk to my brother Joe, who co-writes a lot of stuff with me, and we'll just talk like, one time this happened to me, and we'll talk about it on the phone for like a couple hours, you know? And then we'll talk about which ones are good enough stories that are worth telling. And then I'll go out and try it on stage. I'll record it and I'll go back and transcribe what I said. And then I'll edit from that transcription.
That's interesting. So you co-write with your brother.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing that for?
10 years.
Does your brother do stand-up at all?
No, he tried. He tried, but he doesn't like me on stage.
But he enjoys the creative process.
Loves writing. Super funny guy. But he doesn't like being on stage.
What does he do for a living?
He works for me.
Oh, really? So he's a writer?
Yeah.
For you?
Yeah,
wow.
Writer-producer. Writer-producer. Yeah. Co-wrote my movie Sleepwalk With Me.
Oh, that's so cool. The Sleepwalk With Me was really interesting. For folks don't know, Mike is you're a sleepwalker.
Yeah, I jumped through a second story window in my sleep.
Yeah, and you talked about that on the podcast last time you were here,
yeah.
And that movie is sort of based on that, on how weird that thing must be to have that in you, this ability to just get up and start doing things while you're actually asleep.
Yeah, and I still deal with it. I sleep in a sleeping bag to this very day. When I go to bed and I sleep in a sleeping bag.
You bring a sleeping bag when you go go camping when you go to hotel
rooms.
On
the road, yeah. Exactly. I go camping when I'm at hotel.
And you zip yourself up you can't get
zip
up.
Zip myself up. I used to wear mittens so I couldn't open the sleeping bag. That's what the doctor told me. That's one of the strangest things a doctor has ever told me. He goes, I want you to go to bed at night in a sleeping bag and sleep, zip yourself up, and then wear mittens so you can't open the sleeping bag. The doctor said that to me. Strange.
Wow. Well, this is after you jumped out
after
the window.
After I jumped out of the window, yeah. He was just, it was a woman, actually. My doctor now is a male, but She was just like, I'm not sure what to tell you. In the meantime, just do this.
What floor do you live on in New York?
We live on, I mean, my bedroom's on the second floor, but we have these really, like, super reinforced shutters that we put in that are pretty expensive.
Just to keep you from jumping through the windows?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I'm a strange bird.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you don't want to jump on a second floor in Manhattan. Where did you jump?
In Brooklyn. I jumped through the second story window of La Quinta Inn in Walla Walla, Washington. As a matter of fact, there's a plaque. You might be able to Google this, La Quinta Inn, Birbiglia plaque. I tweeted it a while back. There's a plaque on the door of the room.
What?
Mike Birbiglia jumped through this window, and there's a movie based on it. Yeah.
No way.
Isn't that cool? It's like, it's honestly.
It's only
like,
cool because you're here and you're fine.
Yeah.
You know, if you died, then, you know.
Yeah, it's Ira Glass, who co-wrote the movie and produced the movie with me, hosted This American Life on public radio.
Yeah.
He was insistent that we get the plaque put up. That it was like, he didn't care about like Oscars or Golden Globes. He was just like, here, look at the plaque.
Yes.
Check out the plaque.
In this room on January 26, 2005, comedian Mike Birbiglia sleepwalked out the window. That story became the basis for the book and the feature film Sleepwalk With Me. Seriously? Google it.
Hey, isn't that great?
What a weird world we live in that's a plaque. Seriously? Google it is on the plaque.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ira was really intent on us getting a plaque on the room. He was like, that was everything to him. He was like, where's the plaque? Is the plaque up yet? It was like 6 months afterwards.
Wow.
I'd sent it to him. And
so that's on the door. So
it's on the
door,
yeah.
You're walking by, that's on the door.
People sometimes will go to that La Quinta Inn and they'll take photos in front of it and then tweet it. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I'll bet you get a lot more now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's hilarious. That's really fucking fun. Well, it's hilarious again because you're okay.
Yeah.
Now, when you jumped through the wall, like when you jumped out the window.
Through the window, yeah.
The actual glass itself.
Yeah, yeah, shattered.
Oh, my God.
Jumped through. And I have, in the movie, in the final credits, there's actual photographs of, after I jumped through the window, I photographed it like it was a crime scene. Because I was alone in Walla Walla, Washington.
Right.
And I was like, nobody's going to believe me.
Right.
I went to the hospital, all this stuff. But I was like, this is too crazy of a story. I need to photograph everything so it's all in the credits.
How did you get through that without even getting really badly hurt?
The same reason that a lot of times drunk drivers aren't hurt. They're the ones not injured. You know what I mean? When they get in car accidents.
Because they're so relaxed.
Yeah, they're so relaxed.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
The idea that tension is what hurts you.
Yeah. I dreamt that I was being, that there was a guided missile headed towards my hotel room. There's all this military personnel in the room with me. And the missile, they told me the missile coordinates were set specifically on me. And so I thought the only thing I could do is jump out the window so as to detonate outside the window for the sake of my platoon.
Wow, you are a hero in your crazy story in
I know.
Your head. Wow, that's fucked. Now, what was the extent of your injuries?
I still have scars on my legs. There was like glass in my legs, and they took out the glass. And I was, my arms were all cut up, and I had about 30 stitches.
That's nothing.
It's nothing. It's nothing compared to what it could have been.
Wow.
And what's wild is I actually jumped through the window and landed and then got up and kept running. Isn't that weird?
So you were still asleep?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then as I'm running, I'm looking around and realizing like, oh, I just jumped through a window in Walla Walla, Washington. And I was like, oh no. And I was like, I guess I got to go to the front desk and explain what happened.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then this is a funny addendum to the story. I feel bad for my fans. Your fans maybe have seen the movie, maybe haven't. My fans have heard this a zillion times. I feel bad. But I'll give you an addendum to the story, which is new, which is I always say that I walked to the front desk to explain what happened. Fortunately, the person working at the front desk was mildly retarded. And I say fortunately because he's completely unfazed by what had just happened. It's 3 a.m. The phones are ringing off the hook from people staying at the hotel who just saw the guy jump out of the window screaming. I'm bleeding in my underwear. And I say, hello, because you have to start somewhere. I say, I'm staying at the hotel.
Oh.
I had an incident where I jumped out my window. I'm bleeding, and I need to see a doctor. And I was so relieved because the guy working at the front desk goes, all right. He's like completely unfazed by what had just happened. So I drove myself to the hospital. He told me where it was. The addendum is that guy who worked the front desk Facebook messaged me and said, hey, I'm the guy at the front desk.
And I'm not mildly retarded. Is that what he said?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
But what's great is that the message is so incoherent that he sent me that it's like, well,
are you sure?
If I forwarded this to someone, they might take my side on it.
Oh my God, that is such a crazy fucking story. Yeah. So, were you there for a weekend? Like, did you have to do stand up there the rest of the week?
I was performing at a Whitman College that night, and then I was performing at University of Oregon the next day, and I actually did the gig with all the brokenness, and I didn't tell anybody.
Wow! So you just did the gig and just did your stand up?
Needed the money. I was broke,
and you were just mangled, cut up. Yeah. And, wow!
I wasn't nothing. Messed with my face up, so no one could tell I was wearing long sleeves and everything.
That's so lucky. That's unbelievably fortunate.
Yeah, it was just honestly, it was a moment in my life where I was broke. I was hustling so hard. It all factored into the jump through the window. I was dealing with a lot of anxiety.
So the anxiety and the stress, they manifest itself in the sleepwalking?
Yeah, so I'm diagnosed with REM behavior disorder, which is a chemical imbalance. It means some people who have a dopamine deficiency, which is the chemical that's released from your brain into your body when you fall asleep, that paralyzes your body so you don't act out your dreams. That's essentially what happens when you sleep, is your body's paralyzed, you can't do it. I have a dopamine deficiency, and as a result, I act out my dreams. And so since then, I was diagnosed, so I shouldn't tell people what I take, but I take an anti-anxiety.
L-dopa.
Yeah, and then and it calms me down. And then I don't feel like I need in my dreams to run away from things. Like,
why do you say you shouldn't tell people what you take?
Well, because I'm not a doctor, so I don't want to tell people. I don't want people to self-diagnose.
Oh, okay.
And go, oh, I have that, and it's like you don't really know. I did a sleep study. I slept overnight at the hotel, at the hospital, four nights. Like, they really know what I have.
Yeah, well, that's very responsible of you.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. So when you start taking this medication. You, even though you're taking this medication, you still don't trust yourself. You still zip up.
Yeah, kind of like a condom over a birth control pill.
Wow. Well, I guess once you jump out of a fucking window.
All bets are off.
Yeah. You got to get some reinforced shutters. Why do you have bars over your windows, man? Are you worried about break-ins? Nope, breakouts. Worried about breakouts. The crazy breakouts.
We're trying to keep it in.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so by taking anti-anxiety medication, has that changed you, like, in your regular everyday life?
I'd like to think no. I fear sometimes yes. I mean, like, you know, I feel like what I take, for a while it felt like it made me a bit fuzzy. I feel like when I wake up in the morning, I have to drink a lot of coffee to get to regular, which I don't love.
Right, and it's all because of that, huh?
Yeah.
Is there any natural cure? Is there anything that you've
I've been going
into?
To a holistic doctor recently.
Those
who's been
motherfuckers,
given...
though.
Oh, you don't think that's good?
I don't know. I just always say that. Someone says, holistic doctor, oh, those motherfuckers.
Well, no, she took 10 vials of my blood and did a whole thing on which vitamins I should take to counterbalance things, and I feel like that's leveling me off a little bit.
Do you watch your diet? Are you fairly healthy?
I try to, yeah.
Try to?
Trying to have protein in the morning and stuff like that.
But do you eat gluten and
I'm trying to wean myself off of it.
Yeah.
you eat gluten?
I stopped about 6 months ago.
How do you feel about it?
A lot better. I stopped when I was filming this show. I was having back problems from jujitsu.
Oh.
And one of the things that this woman who's a physical therapist told me, she's had real good results. People that have injuries, getting off of gluten reduces inflammation and a lot of the symptoms of the injuries subside. And I was like, wait a minute. You can tell me that, like, bread, like stopping bread makes an injury better? And she's like, you really would be amazed. And so I tried it, and my injury got better, like, slowly but surely on its own through a lot of different therapies that I was doing. But what was amazing was my energy level was different.
Yeah.
My energy level, especially after meals. That was the most shocking thing. Like, I eat so much bread and pasta.
Me too.
And then I would realize that, like, after I had eaten, it was like I got hit with a tranquilizer dart.
Yeah,
I just thought that's what it was. I thought I eat like a pig, yeah. And this is what happens after you eat.
Right, like eating is like sex.
Yeah, but no, man, not now. Now I eat, and after I'm done eating, I'm full, but I'm not in a coma.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's a totally different experience for me. Because my whole life, I mean, I'm Italian mostly, and most of my life I grew up eating like that, eating pasta and bread with almost every meal. And when I stopped eating it, it was like, whoa, this is what I've been dealing with my whole life for no reason. Like, every time I eat, I would eat these big giant meals and I'd be like, oh, I just kick back. And
yeah, I know that feeling.
that I don't get that anymore. Now I eat, and you know, obviously my body's digesting. I feel full,
yeah.
But I don't feel like sedated.
Los Angeles is great for that. New York is good for that. But like, when you travel, do you have a hard time finding the food that you want?
Steak and salad. You know,
steak salad,
chicken salad. I'm not ridiculous about it because I don't have celiac disease. So
yeah.
It's not like I have to avoid it. So, you know, if something is breaded or, you know, it doesn't kill me. It just I think it sets me back a little bit. I think your body's not designed to there's wheat that we eat today is very different from the wheat that people ate 100 years ago.
Yeah.
In the 1950s and 60s is when they started engineering wheat to be more hardy, so for better yields and so it could survive pesticides and whatnot. And that wheat is much more difficult for people to process. It just is. It's a fact. That's a science.
Yeah.
I mean, there is science behind that. So when, you know, people talk about, oh, it's just another fad, it's actually not. You know, there are most certainly fads, you know, as far as, you know, like the Atkins diet and all these various diets that can work. You know, they can have an effect. You know, you go into ketosis, I guess it's called, and, you know, your body starts burning fat instead of carbohydrates. And I tried that. I didn't like it at all. This is very different. This, to me, seems like cutting out something that my body really just doesn't enjoy processing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I still, look, I'm not a perfect eater. I still eat ice cream and I still drink milk. And
what do you do about pizza? Gluten free pizza?
I don't. I tried. It's dog shit. It's dog shit.
Wow.
I haven't had pizza in a long
time. It's hard
for
me not to have pizza.
Yeah, I haven't had pizza in like, it's been at least 6 or 7 months since I've had, except some gluten free pizza, which was I made a tweet about it. I said, I'm having gluten free pizza to let you know that you don't have to.
Yeah.
Don't ever. Just don't. It's not pizza. It's nonsense.
Yeah.
Someone said there's a good kind out there, but I think they're just those fucking people that don't want to believe.
Yeah.
I don't know. But as far as like health, I think the majority of people don't get enough. The big issue, I think, as far as like nutrition is green leafy vegetables and a lot of vegetables. Like,
yeah.
People just don't eat enough vegetables. And if you don't eat enough vegetables and you also don't take vitamins,
like, yeah,
good luck. You know, your body's just basically operating on proteins and carbohydrates and whatever the fuck it can find, but you're not getting enough vitamins. You're just not. Like the idea of a balanced diet, most people's diet they're not even close to balanced.
Yeah.
It's like I've watched friends like been like on the road, like comics. I've been with them for every meal, you know, and I've watched what they eat. And
yeah.
I'm like, you're not getting anything.
Yeah.
Like you got an egg in there. Yeah. There's some bread in that. And
yeah.
I think there's a piece of lettuce there. Like where the fuck are you getting your vitamins from, man?
Yeah. I think I'm in that boat.
Do you take supplements? You take vitamins?
Yeah, I do now. I just started to like 2 months ago.
Just started, really? Wow.
You're so disappointed.
No, it's interesting.
Oh, gosh.
Wow. Did you notice a difference once you started taking vitamins?
Yeah, I feel better.
Yeah.
I feel better. I have.
Your body's not starving.
Yeah.
You're vitamin starved.
I am vitamin starved, yeah.
But most of us are.
Yeah.
And if you eat the average, well, quote unquote, average American diet, you're vitamin starved.
Yeah. It's hard to travel and be healthy.
It's very hard.
What I started doing yoga when I travel.
Oh.
And I feel better. I feel a lot better doing that.
That's because all the girls with yoga pants in the class. It makes you feel better too.
Is that what it is?
I'm excited.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding the whole thing.
No, yoga.
Well,
because
if that was the pick, I could just go to the yoga pants store.
Yeah, you could just go to a strip club and you feel great. Well, I started going to strip clubs on the road, and I just, it really picked me up. I started feeling
more excited. I wrote down a strip club name. I played Largo the other night, and there's a place across from it that I don't know what it's called in the phone book, but the name on the outside of the door is Star Strip. This is all the same font and font size. Star Strip, totally nude, live nude, girls, girls, girls.
The Star Strip on La Cienega.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, I had a bit about that, a true story, where the girl was dancing, and I said, hey, do you like doing this? She goes, I don't talk to guys who come here. And I said, well, why? I mean, it's an open door. I mean, like, nice people can come through, too. And she goes, well, most guys who come here, they only come here for one reason. I mean, why did you come here?
Yeah.
Like, she was, like, shutting me down.
Yeah.
And I said, because someone told me there was a place that I could go where I could see a strange girl's pussy for a dollar.
Okay.
And that was the joke. Like, I'm the asshole. You know, all I did is show up where you work. All right, I'm not a bad person because you work here. You know, different people go to different places for different reasons.
I used to go to strip clubs a lot, and you know what turned me off? I was in Nashville once. I saw a commercial on TV for a strip club, and I was like, I would like, that seems fun. I'll go there. And I went, and then I gave the guy my ID when I walked in, and he goes, hey, Mike Brambiglia. I like your comedy. And I was just like, I'm never going to a strip club again. I've never gone back.
Why? Because
I like the anonymity of it. I don't want to be, I don't want anyone to watch me watch someone be naked. I can't handle that.
You need a wig and a fake mustache and
do you have
ID.
One?
A wig or a fake mustache?
A wig and a fake mustache.
I can get you one. We're in Hollywood. There's plenty of stores.
Yeah, that's why I'm here. Sorry it took so long for me to get to the point. But, yeah, do you have, like, a costume I could wear? Because
I really want to go to strip
really
clubs.
I'm dying to go to strip club.
But no,
it's funny because you should say that about you're asking, like, why the woman was there and everything. Because that was when I used to go to strip clubs, that was what I was most interested in.
Yeah.
The story. I want to know the story. Yeah. How did you get here?
And some of them.
Maybe it's kind of mean-spirited in some way, but it is interesting to me.
I don't think it's mean-spirited. No, I mean, you can have I have been to many a strip club in my day, and I've had some fun conversations with girls who are dancers where it wasn't demeaning, it wasn't
I mean it respect. Yeah. I meant it respectfully when I would do it.
I've talked to very nice people that just happen to be dancers. There's nothing wrong with it, man.
I agree.
I think there's a weird sort of a connection between stand-up comics and strippers anyway, because our worlds are so odd in comparison to the average person.
Oddly similar, I think.
In a lot of ways,
Because stand-up comedy, you're as naked as you can be.
Yes.
Verbally, and you're talking about your life.
Yeah.
The best comedians, essentially, is like you're like watching them naked in a certain way.
Absolutely.
And that's obviously the strippers, literally.
Yeah, and you're also living this weird alternative life that most people can't relate to. Most people with 9-to-5 jobs can't relate to.
Yeah, very strange.
Yeah, like if you date a stripper and she comes over your house at 3 o'clock in the morning after she gets off work, and you know she's got her little glitter bag full of money, and you know, it's like we're both weird. You know, I just got done telling jokes and you know drinking on stage, and here you got off stage. They're weird lives.
Being an actor is a weird life. If you date an actor, it's strange.
Yes, but in a less naked way.
Yeah, but your wife or girlfriend's like making out with some guy in the day.
That's true.
At work, over and over again.
That's ridiculous.
Take after take.
Fuck that. Yeah, I've seen that before.
Yeah.
I've seen people like watch their wives or girlfriends make out with other guys, like tongue and everything. And
yeah.
Like, and watch him and watch her and watch him and watch her and go, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But the acting thing is like the opposite of being naked. It's like putting on a fucking outfit.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah. I don't think it's naked at all. I think the acting is putting on like armor. It's putting on like this armor of this bullshit character that some writer created, and you're pretending to be this person. Whereas...
No, but I think the best ones are opening up.
Opening up?
Yeah. They're opening up their souls. I think the best ones.
The
best actors.
I mean, they become that guy, but I mean like... Okay, here's a perfect example. Christian Bale in The Machinist, he wasn't really an anorexic that was that couldn't sleep. I mean, he forced himself to do that. He just became that guy for that role. It was an affectation. He put it on.
Yeah.
It was a costume. It was a role he played. It wasn't him.
It was
who he decided to be. I mean, we can find areas in ourselves. That's one of the weirdest fucking...
Wow. That is so weird.
That he was both
looking
of those
at the
guys.
Photo right now.
It's him next to him
outrageous.
As Batman when he was fucking swole.
Whoa.
Which is only like 6 months later, I think.
The photo on the left is real?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What?
He starved himself. He ate like a can of tuna and an apple like every day. That's like all he ate. And he got down to an insanely small size. I think he was down like 130 pounds or something ridiculous like that. He's a big guy. And then he went up to 200 plus when he played Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty nuts, man. That guy's nuts. That thing that they do, like I just got back from last weekend. I saw Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah, I heard
Matthew
that's
McConaughey.
Yeah.
fucking fantastic.
I heard it's great.
I have a friend who always shits on Matthew McConaughey and thinks that Matthew McConaughey's acting is terrible.
Yeah.
That Matthew McConaughey's like, his ego is transparent in his acting. It's mostly because my friend's an actor. But I said, dude, you got to watch Dallas Buyers Club and then shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
The guy knocks it out of the park.
Yeah.
He's fantastic in it.
I saw two movies this weekend. I saw the Catching Fire. I liked it.
What's Catching Fire? The
Hunger Games movie.
How dare you say that?
Why?
Nothing.
I know. Everybody makes fun of me. I like Gravity. I don't know.
Gravity was good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. You know what I thought found was fascinating about Gravity was watching Neil deGrasse Tyson tweet about everything that's wrong with the movie and then watching people attack him. Because
oh, did they? I didn't see that part of it.
I saw a lot of that. Because Neil deGrasse Tyson is, like, he's one of those guys that I don't think ever takes heat, you know, because he's such a nice guy. He's so brilliant. He's so, like, well-informed about the ways of the universe and so excellent at expressing himself. He's, like, one of the best representatives of science I think we have today.
Yeah.
And he always gets love everywhere he goes. Like, there's all these internet memes with pictures of him.
Yeah.
And then this came out, and he starts correcting the movie.
Yeah.
And the fucking hate. You can't correct a Sandra Bullock movie. You just can't.
Yeah.
You can't hate on Sandra Bullock. They fucking went after him.
Wow.
Neil deGrasse Tyson says his criticisms of Gravity are a compliment to its quality. Huh? Well, that's because he took the hit. The right to be to earn the right to be criticized is a high compliment indeed. What? That sounds like a guy who's fucking feeling the heat.
Wow.
He's talking nonsense. He's feeling the heat.
I love them. Some people criticize the story of the movie, and I was like, you know, I felt like 10 minutes in, I was like, I got my $15 worth. I never thought that I'd know what it felt like to go to space.
Yeah. I love the fact that everything was silent.
Me too.
You're like in the middle of the explosions and all that shit, it's silent, and yet you're still freaking the fuck out. It was actually more effective, I thought.
Did you see the director's movie Children of Men?
Children of Men, yes, I saw
that.
He
directed that.
Yeah.
That's
a pretty
great film, yeah.
That was the one where people are like the males or like the people can't breathe or something.
Yep, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing that I found was most fascinating about Gravity. Was the idea that people do really go up there and really do stay up there for long periods of time in space, and they really are in grave danger. And this possibility of things colliding in space junk, it's a very real problem.
Yeah.
There's fucking thousands of things floating around above the Earth.
Yeah.
Thousands.
No, it's so insane. John August, the screenwriter, made this point that I think is kind of brilliant about it, which is, what's exciting about the movie is it's a $100 million movie, major budget movie, where the lead character doesn't save the world. She just saves herself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's powerful.
Yeah. What people didn't like, though, a lot of people didn't like the George Clooney guy because it was just so. And the other thing was like when he lets go, when he has to let go because it's pulling him away.
Yeah.
There's no momentum in space.
People said the science of it's wrong. Yeah.
The science of it is so wrong.
I was fine with that, though, because I don't know much about science.
Yeah. The science is not just wrong about that. It's also wrong about the positions of the various space stations.
Yeah.
Like they're not anywhere near each other. Like what she did by skipping from one to the next would be absolutely completely impossible. They're not in the same hemisphere. They're nowhere near each other.
I just gave it the benefit of the doubt because she had that weird divorce.
Because of Jesse James, he gave this movie the benefit of the doubt. That's how it works.
Yeah, I was like, I'm
going
to let it go with the science stuff just because she's had a hard time the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's sweet of you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a big fan of anything space. I think space is probably the most overlooked thing
fascinating in
the history of humanity.
It's incredible.
We just don't have enough light.
I feel that way about the sea.
The sea is another one.
Yeah, the sea and space are the two most interesting places, I think.
Yeah, the sea less so for me, but still pretty fucking fascinating. You know, it's basically like a jungle underwater.
I loved what you were tweeting the other day about blackfish, because I think that that's a great cause.
Oh, yeah. We had Phil Demers, who was a trainer over at SeaWorld or whatever the fuck it was, Marineland in Canada. That was depressing.
I know.
Shit.
It's miserable, but it's good that you're tweeting about it because it's a good cause.
Yeah, I agree it is. sea life, very fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And intelligent sea life, even more so.
I just think people are very, this is not funny, or, and I don't, neither here nor there, but I just think people are generally unwilling to accept sea life and animals as having an intelligence that we just don't understand.
Well, they certainly do. I mean, there's no doubt about it. When you talk to people who understand orcas or dolphins, they're very intelligent.
Yeah.
They're just intelligent in a different way because they don't alter their environment.
Yeah.
And as we were talking about space, about how fascinating space is, that the real issue is if we treat intelligent life forms on this planet that we can't understand the way we do, and especially helpless ones, essentially helpless ones like orcas and dolphins, they really can't do anything, you know, to prevent us from doing what we want them to do.
Yeah.
They really can't prevent us from kidnapping them. They can just try to run away, but they can't fight back. They really can't do anything. What is an alien race going to do to us? If they ever get a hold of us?
Oh, I'm so worried.
They see how we treat intelligent life forms. Why would they respect us? Why would they want to do anything? Why would they, you know, why would they be kind? Why would they give us information? Why would they try to help us evolve?
Well, it's going to go, aliens is going to go, and it's not an if, it's a when the aliens come or we arrive at the aliens, it's going to go one of two ways. We enslave them, they enslave us.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the only version of what can happen.
Or we eat them, or they eat us.
Yeah.
Or we fuck them, or they fuck us. Right?
Yeah.
Do you ever get a chance when you're doing all your travel? Do you ever get a chance to go to any observatories, like the Keck in Hawaii, or you know any of the telescopes?
Yeah, I tried to. Yeah, I haven't done it recently, but yeah, I tried to.
One of the most life changing things I've ever done, besides psychedelic drugs and having kids, is going to the Keck Observatory.
And where is that?
It's on the Big Island of Hawaii.
Oh, okay.
The fucking view of the stars is so mind blowing. You can't believe it's real.
Wow.
Because you're on the island. It's 9,000 feet above sea level is the visitor's place. And then there's the main observatory, which is even higher than that.
That's
you're
insane. Literally, I'm looking at the picture. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
You're above the clouds. That's literally above the clouds. As we were driving, you know, I was with my family and we were like, oh, this sucks. It's cloudy. We're going to miss it. This is not going to work because we're gonna get up there and we're not going to be able to see through the clouds. But then you pass through the clouds. And then you look up.
Whoa.
And that's nothing. What you're seeing
really?
There, yeah, that's nothing.
The only thing I can compare to this is Alaska. Have you ever been to Alaska?
Yes.
Like,
amazing.
Fairbanks is unbelievable. I highly recommend. People listening to this, I've never been to Hawaii and I want to go there. People who have never been to Alaska should go to Alaska if you have the means.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt.
Because it is, they say, you know, they call it the last frontier and everything. But it really is. It's undiscovered areas. It's uncultivated areas. And it's stunning.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I went salmon fishing with Ari Shaffir.
Wow.
We went up there this year in July. And we caught salmon and did a gig up there. And I fell in love with the place.
It's incredible.
Anchorage is incredible. Really fucking cool people, too. Like, there's a quality to the people that live up there because they're living in a legitimate wilderness.
Yeah.
They have a city, and that city is surrounded by absolute legit wilderness. Like, someone on the University of Anchorage campus last year got killed by a fucking moose.
Yeah, it happens.
A moose came on the campus and stomped someone to death.
Yeah.
And that's, like, part of their life.
Well, that's the thing. The students are very competitive.
I don't think that's what it was about, Mike Birbiglia.
Well, you didn't read the same article.
Wild. No, I talked to the guy who was there. No. My friend is actually a professor at the university.
I'm going to Conan right now. I got to drive there. I have no wallet.
Mike Birbiglia has no wallet. So if you get in an accident.
I'm screwed.
And it's the same sort of situation as the last time, you'll be doubly screwed.
I'm worried about my whole day, to be honest with you.
You on Conan tonight?
Yeah, tonight.
What time is Conan?
I think Conan's on at 11 on TBS.
And there's a new show after Conan now. Doesn't somebody else have a show now?
Yeah, Pete Holmes. Pete Holmes.
But has it started yet?
Yeah, he's really funny.
Yeah, no, I mean,
it's
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's on.
Like you're defending him. I'm not saying Pete Holmes isn't funny. Pete Holmes is very funny.
No, it's
how dare you?
You know, it's on TBS. I think it's in reruns right now, but it was on for a few weeks, and then I think they're waiting here whether or not it gets picked up. But it's great.
So your new CD is called My Girlfriend's Boyfriend.
Yeah.
It's available now, it's iTunes, Spotify.
Yeah, girlfriendsboyfriend.com is the site. But
and Birbigs.com is your website.
Yeah.
Birbigs is your Twitter.
Yeah,
Birbigs. B-I-R-B-I-G-S.
Yeah. Yeah, all that stuff. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime,
this is so fun, man.
I'm sorry we had a little miscommunication. I thought we were going back and forth. I thought you meant
last
this
week or something.
I thought you meant this week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That you were coming in town this week, but you were actually, this is your last day, right? You're here?
Yeah, that worked all fine, though.
Well, next time you're here, man, let's do a longer one. People love you.
Thank you.
And
oh, wow.
Go buy it. Go buy a CD. It's hilarious, I'm sure. All your stuff is great. You're
Thanks.
A very, very funny comic. And,
thanks, man.
Check them out tonight on Conan on TBS. And that's it, you fucks. All right. we'll be back later today with the wonderful Cliffy B from Epic Games, formerly of Epic Games. Cliffy is a renegade on his own now. He gives zero fucks. thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to Lumosity. Thanks. Go to lumosity.com/Joe and click the start training button. Get your learn on, son. Pump your brain up. Get your freak on. And thanks also to Squarespace. Squarespace.com is the website. Use the offer code Joe and the number 12. That's one word. Joe and the number 12 and save 10% for a limited time. That's squarespace.com. Joe, number 12, one word. Save yourself 10% off. And onnit.com. That's O-N-N-I-T. Use the code word Rogan and save 10% off any and all supplements. All right. It is right now 1:30. We will be back in an hour and a half. So we'll see you guys soon.